Hello everyone and welcome to Raya Affairs. My name is Nicola and as always I'll be your host for this episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind the scenes of decision makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you in wherever you are. As always, I would like to start with a disclaimer that expressed opinion in this episode are welcome, even though they are not a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. Today we have a very special episode. Here with me is none other than Raya's director and co-founder, Dario Hasenstab. Hello, Dario. Thank you very much for joining me today. Would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Hello, Nicola. I hope you're doing well. Yes, I'll introduce myself in a second, but I did think it's funny that you read out a disclaimer, right? The one that we always have, because I unfortunately do believe as a co-founder, one of the co-founders and as director, that what I say is to a certain extent reflecting the opinions of Raya.
You're right. This probably doesn't apply to you, but yeah, I'm just used to say it every
I mean, it does apply to me the moment I say something stupid and we have to save the organization, right? So to the audience, to the listeners, in case I say something stupid, it's definitely not what Raya thinks. It's my personal opinion. And in case I say something smart, then it's definitely reflecting the organization.
Great.
All right. Yeah, let me introduce myself. So my name is Joshua Dario Hasenstab, but I tend to go by Dario. I am one of the 13 co-founders of Raya, and by today I am its director. I have a background in international relations and international security. Is it important where I studied that?
Yes, I mean, you mention whatever you want.
All right. So I did my bachelor's degree in Spain, in Madrid, at IE University. Which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who knows Raya a little bit better. A lot of IE students at least apply to Raya and try to be part of the organization. And I have a master's degree from the same university where you are pursuing your master's degree from the Hertie School of Governance here in Berlin. And since my studies came to an end about, I don't know, two or something years ago, I started working in an energy efficiency organization as I do everything, as a project manager, business development, as a lobbyist. So that's something that I kind of do during the day, during the week. And then I happen to run this organization on Fridays, right, when it's my special Raya day, and during the evenings and on the weekends. And then on top of all of that, I also host, together with Balder Hagerts, a good friend of mine and a former professor, I host the Western Bubble podcast, which most of Raya's audience will have heard about at a certain point, because we kind of keep it under the umbrella of the Raya organization.
And if someone didn't know about the Western Bubble podcast, I highly encourage our listeners to go and check out some of your episodes, because I have had the pleasure to listen to a lot of them and they're always super interesting. So if you enjoy the Raya Affairs podcast, you are going to enjoy for sure also the Western Bubble podcast. So thank you very much for the introduction, Dario. And before we start, I'll ask you to answer our usual ice-breaking question that we ask every guest on the podcast. I'm particularly curious about your answer, so I'm really happy that I get to ask you this question today. So could you tell us which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world, would you want to have a conversation with and why?
First of all, thank you so much for your kind words on the Western Bubble. Of course, you have to say that working for Raya's.
Obviously.
Exactly. Like to the audience, maybe listen to maybe half an episode and then you'll be the judge of that. To answer your question about which leader dead or alive, for me, it would be Angela Merkel, the late German chancellor, simply because I'm German by nationality. I grew up in Germany most of my life. I mean, there were a few interruptions, right, living in other countries. But she was the chancellor for most of my life until 4 years ago. I didn't even know men were allowed to be chancellor in Germany because it was always Merkel. And she has shaped the countries in ways that some of them I agree with, a lot of them I disagree with. So it would be very interesting to kind of hear her motivations of that. Also because based on the Raya methodology, right, of analyzing individuals, Merkel has always been a leader that has been very difficult to pinpoint because she's very, well, she has very complex thoughts, unlike like other leaders that we might be encountering in our daily lives. So I would love to go to her favorite Italian restaurant here in Berlin, which I heard is very good, and sit down with her for 3-4 hours, enjoy some, I don't know, nice pizza, and just ask her about certain decisions, ask her about maybe some of the behind the scenes, because I don't know if the audience knows this, but Angela Merkel was very well known for her backroom deals, right? So she never did diplomacy at the center stage. She always did it behind closed doors. Apparently was really, really good at it, at least on a European level. So that's something that I know has always fascinated me. And I do have her book, right? She just recently published her book here. I have it in my bookcase, but it's 700 pages long. I just haven't had the time yet.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I have to say, I think I would enjoy an Italian dinner with Frau Merkel as well. So why not? And I think it's particularly interesting what you said about her way of doing diplomacy, kind of not in front of the mass public, but kind of behind the scenes. And that is particularly interesting considering today we recently have seen a case of diplomacy in front of the public. And that is something that, at least in recent years, from my perspective, I never kind of saw.
You are referring to the incident last week in the Oval Office, right? Between Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and Volodymyr Zelensky, so the President of the United States and the President of Ukraine.
Exactly.
Because for transparency reasons, dear listeners, we're recording this on the 7th of March, and this conversation happened a few days ago, and let's just say that the world is still recovering. In case you're listening to this in 3 years and need some perspective.
Perfect. Well, now I would say that with this being said, we can start our little interview today. And since I have the pleasure to have with me the director and founder of Raya, we are going to have a little chat about the history of the organization, the idea behind it, its vision and mission in international affairs. So I would say that we can start with the foundation of Raya. And I wanted to ask you, what motivated you to create a think tank, and what were the first steps that you had to take in order to establish this organization? In other words, tell us a bit about Raya's early days, the early history of the organization.
Well, I mean, when Raya was founded, I was still in my first, or maybe transitioning into my second year of university. Because, right as I said earlier, I was one of 13 co-founders. And the initiator behind this was my good friend Balder Hagritz, with whom I now have this podcast. And he, as a professor of international relations at IE University, he realized that there was a need or a desire by students to gain more professional experience during their studies, because they did not feel properly prepared to take on the world of international relations after a 4-year bachelor's degree, which is completely understandable, right? I'm pretty sure that a large portion of our audience may be in a similar situation, or they have been in a situation like this. And a 4-year degree is great, right? You get to learn a lot of things. For some, it's only a 3-year degree, but certainly you're not prepared to enter the job market right after. And Balder, he saw this, so he then handpicked a few students from his past classes. And I was privileged enough to be one of them, but I was one of the youngest. So most of them were already somewhat experienced when it comes to like the university level, and all of them amazing individuals. And I almost felt like I did have a lot of imposter syndrome back then. They were, I mean, and they still are much brighter than I am. I was just lucky enough to be the youngest, so I got to learn a lot, but I wasn't an incremental part at the beginning, right? The only thing where I really could make an impact was taking over the design of the website. So the Raya website, as you know today, was designed by me. Also over the years, it has obviously changed. But that was kind of the idea behind it, right? To provide real life working opportunities for IE students. And that's really kind of the reason behind it. Then in the foundation and creation, I wasn't as involved because, again, for me, it was very much about the website. But for the others, the first question was, of course, okay, what's going to be our focus in international relations? Because there are a wide variety of think tanks in the world we live in. And does the world really need another one? And what is the value that a bunch of students and a professor can add? A lot of thinking went into our methodology. We did work on the methodology for about 2 years. It was a very slow, hard, and intellectual process, right? With a lot of research involved, where an entire team, I think it was 8 students or so, plus Boulder focused on that. And then there was another team, and the teams are the same we have today, right? So it's the research and analysis team that focused on the methodology. It is the communications team, which focused on kind of creating a brand, right? So making sure we have a website, making sure we have internal ways of communicating, kind of taking care of some social media accounts. And then there was the internal team, which just made sure that we had some form of a structure for the organization. And then there was the project development team, which was focused on outreach, right? So those were the initial steps we took. And those were also the first 1.5, 2 years where we very much focused on ourselves and figuring out what we could offer to the world.
I can imagine that the whole process of creating this organization has not been always easy. There has been probably obstacles and difficulties along the way. But now I would like to focus on something a bit more specific. And I don't want you to get into specific legal details, but could you please broadly explain to our audience what does it take to found an organization such as Raya from a legal perspective?
I can only answer that question with regards to Germany, because we originally founded the organization in Spain and we legally registered the organization in Spain. And I wasn't involved in that process, thank God, because I do not know Spanish bureaucracy. And quite frankly, I do not know German bureaucracy, but I had to figure it out. So we are a registered non-profit NGO, so non-profit, non-governmental organization. With the founding or foundational reason of providing real-life working opportunities for students and young professionals in international relations, right? So we broadened our mission from only IE students to all types of students, but also to young professionals, because the plan was at some point to move beyond a student organization, actually growing up as an organization, having, as I said, young professionals be part of it and kind of teach and nourish the next generation of students. So what did it take here in Germany? Just to give our listeners an idea of how cruel it is to found an a company here is not that big of a deal, but it's still difficult. But founding an NGO is a nightmare, and founding a non-profit NGO is an absolute nightmare. It's really the worst you can imagine. So I did this together with a law firm. And so we hired them to help us out with all the legal stuff. And there's a funny anecdote I always like to tell, which I talk about every time I explain what German bureaucracy looks like. So when it comes to what Raya does and what we do, the lawyers told me, hey, it's very good if you give us an example, right? Because these are bureaucrats reading these things in German. We translate them from English into German, and it might be difficult for them to understand what you actually do. I said, okay, no problem. I'll describe one of the projects that we do. And one of the projects we did at the time and that we still do today was the summer research program together with IE University. So we, in two sentences, described the summer research program. And then our nonprofit status suddenly was denied. And then I asked why. And the response from the agency was that, well, given that you're a nonprofit and an NGO, right, there's stricter rules that apply. And given that you're offering a summer camp for students, you need to make sure that you have a protocol for vulnerable groups. And I was like, oh, okay. What vulnerable groups are you talking about? I said, well, young children and elderly. And I was like, okay, but we are solely focused on university students and young professionals. Young students on a high school level don't know international relations, and the elderly don't need our help because, maybe that's a market for us, right? That helping senior citizens. Exactly, right? Helping senior citizens into the world of international relations. I'm not sure whether we need more senior citizens in international relations. I think there are plenty already, and IR could really use some youth perspectives. But, right, so I asked the ministry, I was like, what are you talking about? Because that's not our focus group. And then they basically respond with, oh, we thought a summer research program was like a summer camp, right?
Could be.
And I was like, no, we're not going camping. We're doing international relations, right? So just to kind of give examples of some of the obstacles we had to overcome. And keep in mind that each time you ask them a question, they take weeks to respond, of course, because it's bureaucracy. If they were to respond very quickly, it wouldn't be bureaucracy, and where would be the fun in that? So, that's from a legal perspective, it's an absolute nightmare. I can not advise anyone to found a nonprofit NGO.
That's crazy. So my next question is kind of connected to this one. You already mentioned German bureaucracy has a huge obstacles in trying to found and develop this organization. But were there like some other obstacles that you had to face in the process of establishing the organization? Something maybe not related to the bureaucracy and legal status of the organization, but more in the proper managing the organization, finding the people, etc.
So finding the people wasn't a problem because there's a lot of international relations students and everyone wants to have some form of experience in IR. So that wasn't a problem. But as you hinted at, managing these people, right? So managing the people who apply, managing people who then come into the organization. Doing that, particularly in the early years, was very difficult because we were students ourselves, right? So there was a situation where I, as maybe, I don't know, was it like, let's say, third-year university student, maybe 21 years old, I sat in front of a master's degree student who was 26, or in one special case, even in front of a PhD student who was 28, and I instructed them on international relations and what Raya does, right? So there were some bizarre moments like that where it was just really difficult for us to kind of maintain a level of seriousness, which is why in the initial years, the long-term followers of Raya can remember our branding before 2021, right? It was burgundy, red, and gray, and we also called ourselves Raya Group. We tried to present ourselves in a very serious way, almost like a normal think tank out there, which really wasn't what we wanted to, right? So we wanted to be different because we were, right? We are young. So we wanted to be young, wild, free, be out there, go out there, put ourselves out there, and kind of with that make a difference, right? Because that's such an incremental part of our vision, where the vision very much focuses right on, I mean, it's the one you read out at the beginning, right? But on reconnecting the global youth, the global disenfranchised youth with international relations and giving them an easier step into the field, right? So you don't do that by being an old organization. But we had that feeling, because again of imposter syndrome, that we needed to be an older organization to be more serious, right? Because how else can a bachelor's degree student instruct a PhD student? That's a crazy situation. Then as the organization kind of grew up and there were people who had been there for longer, right? Me, some of my colleagues and friends, that changed. And that's also when we underwent our rebranding, when we went from this more senior appearance towards flashy young colors, also our content, our social media, everything changed. And it's very, right, we aim very much at this, bam, in your face, right? Here's our content, deal with it, right? It's not this thing of, hey, here, this is some very serious analysis. You might want to consider reading it because we're trying to compete with an adult think tank. No, we are the global youth. Our way of analyzing international relations is based on a two-year process that has created our methodology where we focus on individual decision makers in international affairs, something that not a lot of organizations out there do. And we do this, like, right, our analysis is very, very mature. But the way we present our content is very much in line with our generation. It's, as I said, it's supposed to be in your face. It's easily accessible, right, through like different forms of media, podcast being one of them. We try to make it as approachable to the global youth as possible. And with this, quite frankly, also to older generations who might not have a background in international relations, our content manages, or at least we aim to manage or to achieve high levels of analysis with low levels of accessibility, that it's really easy to understand what we write about, right? And that's really kind of the goal in all of this. So, right, to kind of answer your original question, that was one of the problems in the beginning, is grow up as an organization to be taken serious. And at the moment we grew up, or like we were grown up, and we realized we no longer need to pretend that we have good analysis and that we know what we're doing, because we have good analysis and we do know what we're doing. That's the moment when we really realized the potential of the organization. We rebranded and we could take off, right? But before that, it was really difficult to appear like a serious organization.
And I think that shows a really important fact, that when you start a project like this from scratch, oftentimes these undergo kind of a process of evolution. The idea changes, the branding changes, and kind of, you know, in trying to find the right fit for the organization, what you want to be, what you want to represent, how you want to share your content, it kind of undergo changes along the way.
Absolutely.
So you already mentioned Raya's mission, trying to reconnect the global youth with international politics and providing opportunities, kind of a platform for students and young professionals for gaining experience in international affairs. Could you please give us just an example of how do you aim to achieve this? What is a practical example of how you want to reconnect the global youth and engage the global youth with international politics, starting from the internship program? I mean, I joined the organization through the internship program.
Yeah, right. So there's both things that are at play here, right? So it's the mission and the vision. So the mission, providing real life working opportunities for students and young professionals like yourselves in international relations, that is one step of connecting a selected few with international relations, because we are giving them a kind of, we're giving them a little lift when they apply to then these kind of more professional or senior jobs in international relations, right? Because we now, so some of the IRAIA alumni, they are working for the European Commission, United Nations, right, OECD. They're working in embassies for other organizations. They're all over the world now. And so that's one of the things, right, is to kind of, I mean, the joke I always make is, for an entry-level position in international relations, they usually require 3 years of working experience. Yeah, but how are you supposed to get these 3 years of working experience if no one will give you an entry-level position, right? And that's where IRAIA comes in. That's where we come in, and we can, I mean, hey, if you stay here long enough, yes, you will at some point have 3 years of working experience. But what we've learned and realized from, based on the feedback from a lot of alumni, is that IRAIA is always a major talking point during the interviews when the hiring manager looks at the CV, right? Of like, oh, what is this organization? Let me know about this. What did you learn there? And then they're always surprised by the extent of professionalism that comes from this organization and the output that is being created. And I have time and time again alumni coming back and kind of saying, hey, thank you so much, right, for the time I had at IRAIA, because this, I just landed my dream job and this was the case, right, what I learned at IRAIA here. So that's one thing. That's how our mission aims to reconnect the global youth with international politics, right? We want to place more of the global youth in international politics. And then the second part is reconnecting the global youth with international politics on a larger level, right? That's the vision, right? Where we always say that we simply want to make it more approachable to the youngsters, to the youngsters. And that, and I mentioned this before, is through making just high quality content that's easy to understand. And not only easy to understand while quickly reading something, but also, right, on the go with this podcast, on social media, with like, I don't know, like all the stuff we do on social media, right? Whether it's normal posts, reels, and or like little videos explaining stuff there, or graphics, right? That's everything on the website is aimed at making sure that someone who is not an expert in international relations and someone who doesn't necessarily understand all the in and outs of international relations, they read our content and they're able to understand it. And then afterwards, they can say, okay, I feel a bit more reconnected. And then the ultimate aim is always that we kind of empower the global youth to partake in the conversations of international relations. That, I mean, that feeling that many of us have had in the past, where, let's say, a group of adults is talking about, I don't know, Trump imposing tariffs on Canada and Mexico. And then you want to raise your voice and it's like, yeah, no, come on, children don't know about this. No, we do. I'm reading IRAIA, right? Something you don't know, old person. And there I learned that if we look at the individual motives that are driving Trump, then there's a very clear and easy path to explain these tariffs. Some that maybe you have not picked up in more traditional sources of media, right? So that's really like kind of those. Like, that's how our mission and vision very much pushes towards reconnecting the global youth.
Great. And your answer made me think about two things. The first is, I personally experienced within IRAIA, one thing that I am particularly passionate about being part of this organization, what you mentioned about the fact that many IRAIA alumni today are working for European Commission, United Nations, many important organizations in international relations. And since we have in our internal meetings, we often have the opportunity to speak with IRAIA alumni, and I think it's always great to hear these stories. And I was particularly impressed by how all the people we had as alumni coming to talk on in our seminars, they always mention IRAIA as one of the main reasons, or at least a talking point during the interview process for their job. So definitely something that helped them in their achievement, in their career. And the second thing is related to what you mentioned before about having high quality content delivered in a super accessible way. And here is, I think, where the Raya methodology kicks in. Now, I don't want you to reveal all the secrets about Raya methodology. I know you're pretty much jealous, rightfully so. But I would like to talk about this unique feature of Raya, which is analyzing international affairs through the lens of individual decision makers. Could you please elaborate on why this perspective is so important?
Well, the original person that told us that this is important was Walter Hagerts, right? Our initiator, as I like to call him. And in international relations, where at first you're taught that international relations are the relations between states. Right. So, of course, if that's the case, then state A doing X influences state B. Right. So that's the most basic way we learn about it. At some point, and different depending on which ism you throw in there, right? Then some others consider organizations to be very powerful and impactful, right? So such as the United Nations, the OECD, the European Union, NATO, and I mean, as of late, right? Companies have also been playing bigger and bigger roles, right? Amazon, Apple, X/Twitter. So all of them kind of look at either organizations or countries/states as these drivers. But what we oftentimes then overlook is that, yes, a state is, right, or like the decision-making process within these states, within governments, is driven by many, many people. But ultimately, it boils down to a very selected few who are making these decisions, right? So those are the images, you know, from the Oval Office, where the president is huddling with maybe the Secretary of State and like the National Security Advisor, right? It's like 3-4 people who ultimately driving these decisions. And then there's usually one person who ultimately makes these decisions, right? Particularly in presidential systems. Of course, this varies depending on which system you're in. And this is something that the Raya methodology takes into account. But we are some of the very few who, as the organization's purpose, it is our idea and ideal to look at individual decision makers. And that's something that is a pretty unique thing. There are some others who also happen to look at individuals, but it's not their main driving purpose. So, and why is this important? Well, because particularly if you look at presidential systems, more authoritarian systems, you can clearly see this, right? You can very clearly see this. And one of my favorite anecdotes I like to give as an example is, again, connected to Angela Merkel. And, well, there's actually two, right? There is, during her first visit to Moscow, to Russia, when she went to the Kremlin, Putin, who is an interesting individual to analyze, right? He knew, as a kind of former spy, right, that Merkel was terrified of dogs. So what did he do during the first meeting, particularly when the Russian press was there? He made sure that his like big dog was led into the room and led it very close to Merkel. And you could see the discomfort in her eyes and all of these things, right? So that's like that's a little thing how these things come into play. But then there's also an example from a few years later. So I always like to tell both anecdotes to kind of make them look evenly smart, Merkel and Putin. There was in a summit in the 2+2 format, right? So it was Russia, Ukraine, Germany, and France, and probably, yeah, I think that was the format. And they were sitting there in negotiations, right? And this wasn't must have been before, like after 2014, right, after the Maidan Revolution, and them trying to figure out, okay, how do we avoid a situation that we have been in now for 3.5 years in today's reality, right? So how do we avoid an open military confrontation between two states, Russia and Ukraine? The negotiations were at an absolute like deadlock, right? There wasn't anything they could do. They couldn't achieve anything. And Merkel, who's also a very smart person, She then invited everyone for dinner, and lovely dinner, lovely food. Putin, who's a very paranoid person, never or very rarely eats food served by foreign countries because he's paranoid about being poisoned. But Merkel, knowing that Putin was stationed as a KSB agent in Dresden, in Eastern Germany, she knew what his favorite beer was at the time. Right. So while she opened a nice bottle of white wine for Hollande, right, the French president at the time, and I don't know what she gave to the Ukrainian president, probably the same. But she knew that okay, for Putin, he's not going to drink anything that I serve him. But you know what? Let me crack open a beer that the beer that I know he really loved during his stationing in Germany. And let me kind of build a relationship with this, right? And so reportedly, right, or at least that's what the story is about, this worked. And then they finally had a breakthrough. But ultimately, obviously, that breakthrough didn't lead to anything because we still experienced the 24th of February in 2022, right? So those are like two little anecdotes and examples of why it is so important to analyze leaders. But disclaimer, as we analyze international relations by looking at individual decision makers, you of course cannot disregard still then the behavior of states, right? The culture of governments and all these other driving factors, right? But it is a very useful lens to look at international relations.
That's very interesting to say. I knew the story about the dog. I didn't know the beer story. Super, super interesting. I definitely agree with what you said. I mean, in general, we kind of have the tendency to look at states as black boxes, where, you know, something come out of this black box, but we don't really know what is driving decisions. And I think this approach is particularly helpful in analyzing pressure points, personal interests, societal interest, et cetera, et cetera. So now, since we have already covered the early history of the organization, I would like to ask you about its evolution in the recent years. Because I joined the organization almost 1 year ago, and already in the last year, some things changed. The organization grew and evolved. So I would like to have a brief overview of how the organization evolved recently. How did you manage to grow this organization from a small group of university students to what Raya is today?
A lot of late hours, right? So That's definitely the case because we all did this, right? And most of you are still doing this as students on top of your studies. So a lot of late hours, right? That's the easy answer. And I'm going to have to give the stereotypical one a lot of hard work as well. Yeah, of course. Nothing in life comes without hard work. Yeah, we all know that, right?
Of course.
But the most important thing was kind of perseverance, believing in the organization, right? So the reason why I'm in charge today and not someone else from the founding generation who are most likely more qualified to be in charge and also know more is that Raya's progress has always been very slow, right? Slow and steady. Because if you write the average time that an intern is expected to devote to the organization is 10 hours per week. So if you have that form of time commitment and you have like a constant changing personnel, right, where interns come in, interns go out, that just doesn't allow for very fast, quick startup-like process. But so that's why it was really important that there was one person who kind of believed in the mission and vision as well. And it was also luck because I was, as I said, I was the youngest one or one of the youngest ones of the founding generation. So while there were the older students at the time who kind of laid all the groundwork, I could then benefit and capitalize on it as all of them graduated from university and moved into the real life, right? Because at that time, Raya wasn't an organization that you could do on the side of a job, particularly not of your first job, right? So I don't know how many of our listeners already have that real job in international relations, but that first job is very demanding because that change from studying and having all that free time and all that energy and then going into your first full-time job, it's a cruel transition. So at that time, right, it wasn't really possible for the older generations to move on or to continue with it because they moved on. And ultimately, I was kind of the last man standing. And then I, on top of that, of my bachelor's degree, did a master's degree immediately. So I had another 2 years to kind of lead the organization. And in those 2 years, I made sure everything at Raya is possible as a young professional, right? That you can kind of drive the organization forward with a few hours during the evenings and maybe a few hours during the weekend that you can kind of work while, let's say, you're sitting on a train for 30 minutes commuting to work, or you're coming home and while you're cooking dinner, you can partake in a meeting or you can do some things, right? So that was one of the keys. And again, for me, it was mostly luck that I was the youngest one when I started, which to me was a bit of a problem when I started because that meant I had to do the website and I couldn't do any of the smart thinking, which in hindsight, good that I didn't do any of the smart thinking because again, there were others who were a lot more capable. But then by me doing the website, I was kind of irreplaceable. And then I, at some point, as I said, was the last man standing. And then I could slowly but surely focus on building this organization from a student organization towards an organization that's aimed at students, but run by young professionals, right? So the most of the leadership at Raya, they're working, right? They're working full time. I mean, I'm not. I'm only working 4 days a week, and then I have the fifth day for dedicated to Raya. But yeah, so that's kind of that. I hope I answered your question with that.
Yes, of course. And now you mentioned before the summer research program in collaboration with IE University as one of the main initiatives at Raya. So now I would like just for you to talk a little bit about the most important projects and initiatives that have had a significant impact in the development of the organization, starting with the summer research program, which is one of the most important projects that we have within the organization.
Well, if you don't mind, I would actually start with different forms of projects and collaborations we've done in the past, right? So,
Of course.
So certainly the most important one was the development of the methodology. And that one it's impossible to give enough credit to that, because every intern that comes in now is still learning that same methodology, right? We've adapted it, like we've tweaked it in some parts, based on just experience and right, also applying it in the real world. But that was kind of that main project. But it was obviously a student project at the time. It was very much a non-profit project. Then we had a few collaborations with other organizations where we started making money. And it was very nice because it meant that finally we didn't have to pay the bill anymore. And then the summer research program was very nice for Raya because it meant to kind of reconnect with IE. So, right, as I said, Raya was started by a group of IE students and an IE professor. And then we became global during the pandemic, right? Because when our original model that we envisioned was no longer working because of the pandemic, we adapted. And then I would say, most significant project has been the introduction of the internship programs. Because before it was very much a closed circle of students. And then we said, no, right, during the pandemic, there were two things that happened. First, a lot of peers, friends, students around us had their internships canceled, which was, right, I mean, of course, pandemic happened, right? But it was very devastating to all of them. So they had, and everyone was sitting at home and had nothing to do, right? So everyone was bored. So we said, you know what, if the job market doesn't want us, then we have to become the job market. And that's when we really capitalized on our mission. So the introduction of those internships was an important thing. And yeah, so then that happened. We became global, right? We now have students from, again, you're sitting in Berlin. Some are still sitting in Madrid. There's many from London. There's some sitting in Washington, Peru, right? I don't know where everyone's sitting right now, right? But we've had people from all over the world, right? I think the other day we counted and there have been somewhere like 80 different nationalities from the same amount of countries at Raya, who are always sitting in different areas, right? They're kind of sitting clustered, right? At like big universities focusing on international relations. That's where their clusters are. But yeah, and then it was very nice to kind of reconnect with IE University and the summer research program, right? Because that's when we for the first time could really use our methodology in a format where like a deliverable came out at the end that we could simply capitalize on, right? So that was very nice. That was very important, and that's something that we're doing all the time now, right? With other organizations as well, and that's right. That was around that time when the progress that I described earlier from turning from a student organization to a young professional organization happened, right? Because, of course, it doesn't make sense that a university would give basically commission an organization, a student organization, to kind of create a project for them. But if you're talking about young professionals who have already finished university, that's a different thing, that's a different deal. So that was a bit of a signal to the world that, hey, Raya is no longer a student organization, but we are an organization of young professionals now, right? And that's the reason why the summer research program was 4 years ago, was so essential for us the first time we did it.
Thank you very much, Dario, for the answer. And I have to say that I was particularly impressed when I joined Raya by this global perspective and global engagement that we have within the organization. I was looking the other day at the analytics from our podcast, Raya Fairs, and I was really super surprised to look at the geographical distribution of our listeners. It was crazy. We had listeners in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Argentina, Ecuador, United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, Spain, like really, really global coverage. We're talking global coverage here. And also with the interns themselves, like really often we are in our seminars, our meetings. And exactly as you said before, I am sitting in Berlin. There's someone sitting in Madrid. There's someone sitting in Nigeria or Kenya. There's someone sitting in Ecuador. Really, really, really diverse geographical distribution. And with this, we come to our last question, which is about the future of the organization. So looking ahead, what are your aspirations for Raya, let's say, in the next 5 or 10 years?
Short answer, right? I want to grow the organization because at the moment we're always somewhere between 30 and 40 people, right? During every term that we do. But not only I want to grow the organization, I also want to make it less elitist. Because as of now, right, particularly interns, and I'm so sorry for all interns, but interns are not being paid here, right? Because it's basically 10 hours of volunteering. That breaks my heart because many times we have the situation where someone who, right, a bright young mind, who is an amazing analyst for their age, tells us that, hey, I really enjoyed my time at Raya, but unfortunately I cannot continue because this summer I have to, I have to go back to my country and I have to work in a restaurant to make sure that I have enough money for the next semester at university. And that always breaks my heart because it means that we are an incredibly elitist organization, right? You need to be able to afford to work for and at Raya. So my wish is obviously the next 5 years to make sure that we can start paying interns, right? That would be absolutely amazing because it means that it's no longer for students from all over the world. It's no longer a choice between gaining real life experience in international relations and then making sure that I bring in my perspective in the IR world or working, let's say, in a pizzeria waiting tables and then having a disadvantage compared to other students who have been at Raya just because of economic differences, right? So that's obviously my personal dream, and that's something that very much drives me because it is so much in the world is unfair. And an organization like Raya, right, the first thing we kind of aimed for was obviously supporting the global youth. But we don't want to support only a selected few. We do want to make sure that everyone at some point, right, that it's no longer a choice between Raya and basic needs met.
That's great. And I have to say that me, myself, I experienced this kind of struggle between gaining experience in the field I'm studying in and earning some money and bringing some money because being a student, normally you're broke, you need some money, you need to pay rent. If you go to live in another city, you need to pay university taxes, etc. So during my bachelor, for example, I spent my whole bachelor working in restaurants and bars, basically doing the waiter. And then when I moved into my master, I had some money apart and I could afford working for Raya and spending most of my time in university studying and preparing for entering the job market once I will be done with my master soon, hopefully.
Which is, by the way, also a really, really valuable experience to have.
Of course. Right?
I do not want to take this away from anyone. If you've experienced the, and I do not want to romanticize struggling, but like if you've experienced the, like, right, kind of waiting tables and making sure that you work for your university time and that you work for making sure that you can pay for tuition, that's a super valuable thing to have. And those are perspectives that are even more needed in international relations, right? Because international relations is a super elitist club of, as of now, mostly old white men, right? And that's changing because the majority of international relations students nowadays are women. So that's already, right, that's a great news of the world. However, it will take a few generations until those women are then in the top positions. But on top of that, you also need a different angle of diversity, right? You need people from the working class who've said, you know what, my mother is a mechanic, my father is a cook, I want to work in international relations and change the world. So I really had to work hard. And that perspective that I bring to the table that cannot be disregarded. And ideally, right, at some point Raya is able to pick exactly those kids, right? Because they are kids at that time, and turn them into those young professionals. And then they will enter the world of international relations and ideally make it even better, because those very elitist perspectives in IR are somewhat damaging to the world as we know it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And even in my case, I have to say all the struggle I went through during my bachelor years, the fact that I needed to work full time and attending university at the same time. I mean, from a viewpoint of personal growth and like things that I learned about a work environment, about having to deal with older people. I was 17 years old when I started. You learn how to deal with the working environment and people older than you, the customers. You become pretty much pessimistic about human nature, I have to say. So no, I was really happy about the experience. But at the same time, what I realized when I then moved into my master, I realized that most of the people who were in the same master as me, they already had tons of working experience because during their bachelor, they did 3 or 4 internships. And that's something that I didn't do. And when I realized it, I kind of, you know, I was pretty much worried about it. So that's definitely an angle with which we can look at this.
Well, and that's something where, right, dear listeners, in case you are in a similar situation that Nicola was, that's one of the criteria we have when hiring for Raya. It's that we purposefully choose people with little to no experience, because otherwise we would become part of the problem, right? If we only take the students in international relations that have already had 3 internships, then we are becoming part of the problem. No, it's very much part of our mission, and that's something that we believe in, is that if you are a first-year student and you have had, let's say, 3 classes of international relations, there's also a place for you within Raya, right? We're always aiming at a healthy mix between having early bachelor degree students, having late bachelor degree students, having master's degree students, and having young professionals. Because that's really what matters in the end, right? So in case you are in that situation, please do not feel like you can't apply at Raya. I hope that Nicola convinced you that that of course you can, and you can become a successful podcast host.
Definitely. So with this, I would say that we can end today's episode. Thank you very much, Dario, for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
It's been great to speak with you about Raya's history, the mission, the vision in international affairs, and also your personal journey in the evolution of the organization. To our listeners, make sure to check out our new articles at rayagroup.org and to follow us on social media to receive any updates on all our new contents. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time.